from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A new mental health care study by the California Healthcare Foundation finds that serious mental illness shows up at much higher rates among lower-income children and adults in California than those in other income brackets. And according to the report, 1 in 20 adults in the state suffer from a serious mental illness, and nearly 1 in 6 has a mental health need. The link to the study, by the way, which is called Painting a Picture, Overview of Mental Health Care in California, is on our website, kqed.org/forum. And we want to discuss the report in this forum segment and focus on what it can tell us about prevalence of disease and access to care and really a whole range of issues which it goes into and takes up in depth. Neil Adams joins us from Sacramento. He's an MD and an MPH, Deputy Director of the California Institute for Mental Health and co-author with Wendy Holt of the California Healthcare Foundation report. And welcome, Dr. Adams. Good to have you.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you.
Good morning to you. We'll also say good morning to Sandra Shuri, who is also with us from the state capitol this morning. She directs state health policy for the California Healthcare Foundation, and we welcome you to the program. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you both. Dr. Adams, let me begin with you, if I may, because this report is really kind of divided into three, and it covers so much. It covers treatment and access to care, as I said, supply and use of treatment. Can you just break it down for us initially in terms of what you were trying to do with the three parts?
Yeah, sure. But first of all, I want to thank the California Healthcare Foundation for taking the initiative to put this almanac together. For many years now, they've had a series of data almanacs that have provided snapshots of various healthcare-related issues. And this is the first time they've done one in the mental health arena. And I think it's timely because for a number of reasons, and we'll talk about that as we go along. I think that there are a couple of really big take-homes for me, and I think it's important to recognize that this is a pretty high-level view, and one could drill down quite deeply in any of these issues, and maybe we'll go a little deeper in the conversation today. But I think the important thing, and you already touched upon one of them, is that there's a fairly high prevalence of mental illness, and particularly serious mental illness. And I want to say that when I say serious mental illness, I'm talking about both adults and children, and that the term we use in talking about children with serious illness is serious emotional disturbance, and we use the term SMI for serious mental illness for adults.
And forgive me, the definition, I believe, of what you're calling serious mental illness is substantial impairment or limits in daily activities. It goes that deep, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, you know, the part of what makes the conversation difficult is that I think mental health really covers a broad spectrum of human issues and human needs that sometimes get jumbled together. And the public mental health system has historically focused on people who have serious and severe illness and who have substantial functional impairments associated with that illness. There are folks who have serious illness and have an impact, but it's not so great as to really disrupt their daily functioning. And the services and the treatments that those two groups have are substantial differences in what they need for treatment and the treatment settings that probably can best serve them. And this bleeds into a conversation about, you know, what should be the role of mental health treatment or psychiatry in the primary care setting as compared to specialty mental health. But largely we're talking about specialty mental health today, and part of that is because of the public impact and public funding, but also as we were asked by the foundation to go ahead and prepare this almanac, it's very hard to get data on what's going on the private side and for folks who have commercial insurance or Kaiser members. So a lot of the data that is available to us comes from what goes on in the public sector.
And in fact, let me go right to that point, Sandra Shuri, because I think part of the reason that Dr. Adams has talked about commissioning this report seems to bear out the notion that there's lack of coverage from private insurance. And that means that public facilities and programs are increasingly important in the role they play here.
Absolutely. And the reason the California Healthcare Foundation was interested in this topic is when we talk to policymakers about what's going on in healthcare delivery, healthcare access, one theme that keeps coming up is, tell us more about this area of mental health. What services are available? What we know is that the public sector is the largest purchaser of mental health services, almost $8 billion the state spent last year. And we play such a big role through the public sector, largely because of the historical stigma and discrimination toward people with mental illness, and then the lack of parity that we saw between medical services and mental health services. One of the reasons we decided to put these reports out now is that the mental health parity laws and the Affordable Care Act are absolute game changers for mental health coverage. There are big policy changes underway that are both assuring that coverage for all our health care needs is included in a health care policy, mental health being an absolutely essential component of that. And then the ACA is bringing people into coverage who have historically not had access to mental health or physical health services.
So well, the burden is on the, as I was going to say, the burden is on the counties now, but affordable health care presumably will change that, as you're suggesting, make for greater access, yeah?
The burden is on the counties today because many people are uninsured and have health, mental health care needs. The counties are going to continue to play a really important role. The way the Medi-Cal program is set up is the least severe mental health conditions are served through the primary care system. So your physician, a nurse practitioner, wherever you go for your usual source of care. Under Medi-Cal, people that have either serious emotional disease or serious mental illness are referred to the counties for treatment. That's going to continue under the ACA. So the counties are going to continue to be really key partners in the delivery of care, but there's now going to be a funding source. And so we're going to see really what I think of as a real bulking up and a real coming of age of the whole delivery system for mental health.
Well, at present, there's a wide variation. How, for example, are, well, the many homeless people out there, what do they come under as far as an umbrella where mental health care coverage is concerned, or do they?
Well, there's no question that there's a high prevalence of mental illness and substance use disorders amongst folks who are homeless, and there's a population of people who are kind of transiently homeless and a population of folks who have chronic or persistent homelessness, and they're two different issues. One of the things I want to add to the conversation early on here is that while we're focused really on mental health, and that was what the foundation asked us to do, we'd be remiss if we didn't say and substance use disorders. The level of co-occurrence of substance use disorders with psychiatric disorders is very high. Amongst people with serious mental illness, amongst adults, we say it should be the expectation, as we approach new patients, it should be the expectation to find that they're using substances as well, not the exception. And yet we have fragmented systems in terms of delivery of services between mental health and substance abuse that only tend to aggravate some of that. So as a placeholder, when I say mental health, I'm really saying mental health and substance use services.
And by the way, again, you can see this report and read it fully on our website. There's a lot of data and there's a lot of visualization of, well, different regions. Geographical variations, as we said, are pointed out in the rates of mental illness. And as I suppose you could expect, maybe the poorest areas have the highest rates and the fewest mental health professionals. But also, Dr. Adams, maybe come as a surprise to some people, half of the adults and two-thirds of the adolescents with mental health needs did not get treatment. And the highest rates, I suppose it needs to be pointed out, are, and maybe this is expected as well, but are among people of color.
We still have huge problems in terms of disparities in health status, and mental health is no exception, and perhaps in some instances the problem there is more extreme. I think that we have been banging on the drum of cultural competence for quite a while now and have made some progress and some headway, but it's not sufficient. You know, recently there was a whole controversy about the release of the DSM-5, and I mention it now because I'm actually excited about it in some respects. It includes or really brings forward and advances a focus on cultural components and cultural aspects of psychiatric practice, psychiatric diagnosis. And I think it goes a way towards legitimizing the concerns that we need to adapt practice to people of different cultures, different races, that cultural factors really impact the perception and experience of mental health problems as well as help-seeking behaviors. But beyond that, there are also serious issues of access that also need to be addressed. So we have continued work to do, and we're not alone in that in terms of disparities and lack of equity being cross-cutting issue in all of healthcare.
Well, I also, there is some good news in this. The lowest overall suicide rate is in California. But it's disturbing. I'm sorry, Sandra, sure you want to add something here?
Yeah, I wanted to pick up on your comment about there being variation shown in the report around the state. When we look at people enrolled in the Medi-Cal program, overall, just under 6% receive mental health services. But in five California counties, it's over 10% of those enrolled in Medi-Cal are receiving mental health. And in three counties, fewer than 4%. So we're seeing really some strong regional variations. You see it not only in how many people are receiving service, but how much is being spent on their care. Statewide, it's about $5,000 being spent in Medi-Cal on people with mental health care needs. But that ranges. There are three counties where less than $2,500 is being spent. And in one county, it's over $8,000 a year.
I also learned from the report that there's been an overall decrease. This is true about U.S. mental health care in general, a decrease in inpatient and residential care, but increase in outpatient and drug spending.
Exactly. We've over the last 20 years, huge treatment pattern changes. Excuse me, Dr. Adams.
No, that's all right. And that is not necessarily a bad thing, although I think we've pared things back and we're now at bone in that there really is a serious shortage of psychiatric beds for acute inpatient care. But overall, I think the shift away from taking people out of their homes and out of their communities and providing on-site, in the community-based treatment, field-based services, is really a value, and I think it goes a long way to support and promote recovery. I think one of the big transitions in the mental health field over the past 15 to 20 years has really been driven in large part by our service consumers and their family members, has been to rethink what has historically been a poor prognosis associated with serious mental disorders and to recognize that people can and do, in fact, recover from serious mental illness and have the capacity to live meaningful, productive lives in the community, albeit with some degree of assistance or support. And, of course, that varies across people and their needs. So the shift to more community and outpatient-based services is not necessarily a bad thing.
And if you've just joined us, we're talking about a new mental health care study by the California Healthcare Foundation, which finds, among other things, that serious mental illness shows up at a much higher rate among lower-income children and adults in California than other income brackets. And we're discussing the report, which is available on our website. Also available at this point is a number of ways for you to communicate your concerns with us or any questions or comments you might have. Our toll-free number is yours to take hold of now. In fact, let me give it to you. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your phone calls, so feel free to call us now. Again, the toll-free number is 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or our Facebook page, where you, of course, can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Talking with Sandra Shuri, who is Director of State Health Policy with the California Healthcare Foundation, and Neil Adams, Deputy Director of the California Institute for Mental Health and co-author with Wendy Holt of the study we're talking about here, Mental Health Care in California, Painting a Picture. I was also disturbed, if I may say so, Dr. Adams, by the number of children who come out as having mental health care problems in the state. The figures are alarming.
Troubling. And I think the number of factors that go into it, and this is one of those items that could be a lengthy discussion into itself, if not several volumes of books and literature. I think there's some issues that are related to overdiagnosis. I think some are related to appropriate diagnosis and better detection than we've had in the past. One of the things I'm excited about that hopefully will begin to address the needs of some of these children is that the counties are now really active in addressing issues that were raised in a class action lawsuit several years ago. It's known as the KDA decision. And we're working at developing better better cooperation and service integration between Department of Social Services and mental health within the counties so that we do a better job of addressing these children's needs. And I think kids who end up in the social service system are extremely vulnerable and probably have not had the kind of access to mental health services in the past. What we want to do is help these kids get through childhood and adolescence without finding them in the adult mental health system later, or worse yet, in the criminal justice system.
And there is, Sandra Shuri, I want to bring our listeners into this, but there is, as Dr. Adams mentioned, changes that are going to take place, certainly with the Affordable Care Act. But I'm also struck by the fact that there's kind of a new awareness, and this is positive, too, and needs to be emphasized, new awareness so that mental health problems are not the stigma that they once were, although they remain a stigma to a great degree, but also a uniting to some extent of the physical problems with the mental problems and a recognition that both need help.
Yeah, for decades, we saw mental health being sort of set to the side. It's different system, different providers, different services were set up for people with mental health needs. Really, the most innovative thinking in the field today is the integration of physical and mental health services. And you see some really exciting projects going on around the state where primary care providers are doing more in terms of helping people because, as Dr. Adams said, people can recover. They can get better. These are not forever conditions, and there are many new treatment modalities. We're seeing really innovative use around the state of things like telehealth, where you're able to provide specialty care to people who couldn't otherwise access those services. A lot of interesting work being done around group visits, different ways to deliver services. So this whole movement to integrate physical and mental health services is exciting. It's challenging. We don't know what the best practices are yet, but I think California is really leading the nation in many ways in terms of seizing the opportunity, realizing there are a lot of people coming into coverage through the ACA who are going to have mental health needs. Medi-Cal eligibility today is based on categories. Are you pregnant? Are you a child? Starting in January, it's going to be based on your income level. Are you low income? Who that's going to bring in is a lot more single, childless adults. Many of those are the people who have mental health conditions and have been excluded from comprehensive coverage. This is a huge opportunity. And what you see around the state is our county delivery systems, our physical health systems really standing up to embrace that in terms of thinking about what are the new ways to provide services, because we know we're going to have an increase in demand.
Again, Sandra Shuri is Director for State Health Policy with the California Healthcare Foundation. And again, if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. And you can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or tweet us at kqedforum is our handle. And we're going to go right to your calls here. But I wonder, Sandra Shuri, you respond to a single payer tweet under the name Single Payer, who says, really? You're kidding. Poverty drives people nuts. A scientific study was needed to codify this, that money could have gone to the poor for health care. In other words, are you telling us something that we perhaps already know?
Do we know that there's a correlation between poverty and all kinds of health conditions? Absolutely. Is that recognition driving social policy? Sure. And is that appropriate? Absolutely. Two studies that the foundation released this week are really intended to be primers because there's going to be the need for more policy on this. Really, we wanted to be sure that policy staff, advocacy groups, providers understand how's the system work today, who's it working for, who is it not working for, because we're going to need to keep improving this as we go along.
And just one other tweet here before I go to your phone calls. Neil Adams, I'd like you to respond to a tweet from a listener named Irma Mala, who says, great segment on the burden of mental illness and disparities. Primary care settings need more mental health resources. I think that is a given, is it not, Dr. Adams?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're going to come from multiple sources. One is expanded training for primary care providers so that they feel more comfortable in assessing and treating relatively simple or non-disabling mental health conditions. And part of what we're seeing going on in the counties is county staff now being deployed into community clinics and the federally qualified health centers to provide on-site mental health staff, both psychiatrists and as well as social workers, therapists, et cetera, so that they become members of the primary care team. And you see a real range of those kinds of configurations around the state, and I think that's the kind of testing of various models and approaches that Sandra referenced before.
And let's bring our callers on. Cheryl, you're first up here. Welcome to Forum.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
I work as an education advocate for a firm, a national law and policy firm, DREDIF, the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund, and most of my work focuses on the mental health needs of children in school. And I just wanted to make a comment about how we're still operating in silos so that, you know, that we all recognize the importance of early intervention, for example, around mental health stuff. And yet, because everyone is so depleted financially, what will happen is the schools will sort of ignore problems and say, well, you might want to go talk to your doctor, you might want to get treatment, rather than do an assessment around how these needs are impacting a student educationally. And then sort of segueing into that, the other problem is that the schools have become the training grounds, and I understand why, for the newest mental health professionals. So what that means is that the poorest children in the most vulnerable communities are getting the interns, and they're trained, and then they go off and have their professional life. So I just wanted to make a comment about how, you know, if we really are serious about mental health treatment, we need to stop operating as if children have needs only at home or only at school or, you know, and really create an integrated model.
Well, Cheryl, thank you for those comments. Appreciate hearing from you. And let me hear from another listener, and that's Bob. Bob, join us.
Hi. We know the Affordable Care Act is going to save money on the federal level. The detractors talked about after 10 years it'll cost more. It'll cost more from the federal level if you do nothing because costs go up. So what it was, my question is, I often thought that this would be an actual tax cut because on the state's levels, they cover mental health care for children and for adults. And I was wondering, and the criminal justice system will have savings because these people will not fall into costs. There is there any kind of mapping out estimations? It's early days, I know. It hasn't even started. But is there any kind of rough rules of thumb that you can throw out for people that are conservatives to say, you know, this is what we're looking at that we might be saving, to give just some kind of idea?
Sandra Shuri?
Great, great questions. And one of the factors with mental health is the fact that we know the prevalence is out there. We know people have mental health conditions. We also know half of adults and two-thirds of adolescents with mental health needs aren't getting treatment today. So there is going to be increased demand. I think the cost savings on something like this are going to come broader. And Bob, I think you called one area out, the criminal justice system. California spends about $2 billion a year today on mental health services through the criminal justice system. If we can intervene with people earlier, get them on a healthier path, that should result in savings. I'm not aware that anyone's done the modeling for how the mental health increase in services and access is going to play out overall. Really good idea for further study.
And let me thank Bob for the call and read a couple of your emails here. Barb, I'm sorry, Neil.
Yeah, I was just going to add something in response, that there are actually quite a number of studies, not at a large systems level, but at a more micro level, looking at service outcomes, that when you have integrated mental health and primary care, there really is a clear return on investment, and that both mental health costs go down as well as general medical costs go down. And think of someone with diabetes who's also depressed and does a poor care job in self-care and self-management. The depression sometimes is what's core to that, and if you can treat the depression, everything gets better. And that's just but a small example. But there is a robust literature on good return on investment for integrated care.
Well, here's an opinion from a listener named Vince who kind of goes to the contrary of that, and he says he's both a receiver of mental health care services.
and a taxpayer, and he says, I know what I'm talking about, and writes, these guests are endlessly talking about treatment and not about the efficacy of treatment and relieving suffering and improving functionality. Why is this? Because they have absolutely no idea. Until this changes, I will vote no for more and more treatment, and so will my friends and neighbors. And Barbie writes, regarding mental illness, specifically anxiety, which is so prevalent in our society, when will the state of California take a serious look at the link between anxiety and some foods that need to be omitted from our diets? Let me bring another caller on here. And Ashley, that's you. Good morning.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I have a rare mental illness called trichotillomania, and I receive behavioral therapy. But my health insurance doesn't, or my provider doesn't accept health insurance. And it doesn't seem as though for some of these more niche mental illnesses, everything seems to be on a fee-for-service kind of scale. And what I was curious about is I have the means to pay for it, but I'm wondering if there's anything in the Affordable Care Act that's helping to kind of close that gap for people who need help but are essentially underinsured. And I can take my answer off the air.
All right, thank you for the question. Sandra Shuey, let me go to you.
I think, Ashley, it's really the parity laws. In 2008, the federal government basically established as the law of the land that mental health conditions should be treated on a par with coverage for physical conditions. Now, as with any law, it takes a while for full implementation. Here in California, you recently saw a large fine against one of the health insurers in the state for not implementing the mental health benefit on a fair and equal basis. You see the regulatory community talking about it. But I think it's through parity, seeing mental health-related conditions as part of what is covered under an insurance policy, that we're going to see the health plans and their provider groups looking for what is the most efficacious treatment for a particular condition. And I just want to acknowledge the email about the frustration that the literature on the efficacy of different treatments, while, as Neil says, it's robust for some conditions, there's more work to do, as there is with physical health, and we need to keep pushing on that research agenda.
And I need to have us leave it there because we've come to the end of the hour, but I want to extend thanks to both Sandra Shuey, Director of the State Health Policy for the California Healthcare Foundation, and Neil Adams, Deputy Director of the California Institute of Mental Health and co-author of the study that, again, is on our website. Should you care to read it, it's there and available to you. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer, Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.